Hello and welcome to Drinking Games Podcast. I am Lola Sonny Butter. I am a Twitch affiliate streamer and I am joined by Silver Grix, who is our editor, he is developer, he is known for the phrase less than a pint.
I love that before we've even kicked off a podcast like properly, I've already got a catchphrase.
Because you're cool.
On t-shirts.
There will be t-shirts available in the store at some point in the future. Yeah. Keep your eyes posted. I am also joined by Jack, who is a writer, reviewer of video games and a bit of an all-round nerd.
And a sensual beast.
And he apparently does some stand-up comedy. So, anywho, we are going to be, well, just run through what we've been playing recently. I have just finished the first Uncharted.
Nice.
And South Park Fractured Butthole for the second time. And I have started, for my sins, Crash Bandicoot Insane Trilogy, so do watch me on Twitch. Try not to throw the controller at the TV. We are also going to be starting Heavy Rain.
Oh, nice.
What did you think to Uncharted then?
Uncharted was good. It was.
How does it age?
It was the most frustrating game I've played for a long time, and then I played Crash. So I know the first Uncharted is not the best Uncharted, so I am looking forward to moving on from that. Grix, what have you been playing recently?
Yeah, so because I'm watching a lot of the World Cup, I haven't been playing as much games, but I have been playing quite a bit on Switch, so I've started Stardew Valley, and thought that for the longest time I didn't realise what I was doing until I realised that I was going to work and then I was coming home and I was working in gaming. Because that's basically a job, right, that game?
Well, yeah, it's like Animal Crossing, isn't it?
Yeah. It's really fun, but it's like a job.
I had to get addictive. Have you been addicted to it yet? I know people who've started it and it's just ruined their life. My dad, he was ill or something, or he had an operation when Animal Crossing was out on DS, and he says he was waking up in the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. Just to do the night stuff in Animal Crossing because they had like a day and night cycle with a timer. Yeah. So he's getting up in the middle of the night to do Animal Crossing stuff.
That's kind of an addiction, right? Surely.
Yeah, that's not right.
So no, I'm not. I have looked at my watch and gone, holy shit, I've been playing this for like 6 hours. How the hell did that happen? All I've done is water some plants and got some chickens and then made some mayonnaise and then went to bed, and I'm not doing that in real life. What the fuck? Why am
you
I?
You could put some plant pots on your balcony.
I could.
You could actually water those in real life.
I could do that.
You could make your own cucumbers.
Could. Yeah. Or I could just, you know, keep playing Stardew Valley.
Have a few chickens in the kitchen. You know, maybe send some homemade mayonnaise.
I'm not a fan of mayonnaise, so.
You could make homemade mayonnaise anyway. Whoa! Blue joke already.
So other than that, I've been playing Swords of Ditto. I've not played as much of it as I wanted, but that's a really unique PS4 game. It's two-player, procedurally generated, basically Zelda, Link to the Past. Every time you complete it, the world gets better. Every time you die, the world gets more evil. And it's a really cool, fun little aesthetic. So they're the only two real games I've been playing. Last one.
Do you feel like procedurally generated is a nice marketing buzzword now? It's procedurally generated.
Yeah, I think so. I think it is a good buzzword, and I think it's used out of context a lot. I think procedurally generated doesn't seem to mean the same thing for everyone. In Swords of Ditto, it's a procedurally generated dungeon, not necessarily the map. All the puzzles are procedurally generated. It's the same sort of formula, same assets and everything, but even when they did demos of it, the developers had no idea what to do. Like, one of them got stuck in the demo because obviously it was procedurally generated, so we didn't know how to get around this puzzle.
See, that's my problem with it. It's just like, make it yourself because you can then craft it to get the better optimization of the gameplay and everything. You know, like imagine Zelda procedurally generated, it would be terrible.
Yeah, well, it kind of works. Because of the narrative of the story, it's you've got 5 days to basically save the world, and that continuously runs, and if you don't do it in time, you die and you start again, and it's designed so you just keep playing over and over again. There's a curse that goes every 1,000 years. The storyline's irrelevant. They even take the piss out of the storyline in the game, which makes it quite fun, but it kind of works, but I'll let you know once I've sunk more hours into it if it actually works, if I don't get bored of it.
Sounds good. And Jack, what have you been playing recently?
Well, I've completed Chase the Express, and even though it's an old game, I'm doing a review for that on Niche, so I probably can't talk too much, but I'll link that in the description below. Like that, plug there. Boom, straight in with the plug.
Like and subscribe, press the bell.
Yeah. But in short, it's imagine Speed Cross meets Under Siege meets Resident Evil meets Metal Gear very loosely. That's probably the best way to describe it. But
that's not a good way to describe anything. You just listed a bunch of games that are all quite different.
You did.
And films.
And films, yeah. That's,
that's, you did indeed.
But if you play it and see it, it makes sense.
Okay, because I'm even more confused now than what I was when you just told me the title.
Well, you're on a train and there's bombs. Nuclear bombs and terrorists take over the train, which has got an ambassador on, and you've got to stop it.
Okay.
But besides that, I've been playing the first Fear Effect.
Okay.
You love that game.
That was PS2, wasn't it?
PS1.
Oh, I'm thinking Fear Effect 2.
But it's really good looking. Like, it's the top. That's like the peak of besides Resident Evil 1 remake, that's the peak of like pre-rendered graphics. It's really impressive looking, and for the PS1 it looks really, really good. It's hold up surprisingly quite well.
Was it early PS1 phase or
late? I think it was late. But it's bloody hard. You would die a lot in that game, like kind of cheap, fairly cheapish deaths, but it's, yeah, you just die a lot. So because of the saves and the checkpoints, there's bits where you just have to sit through. Like, just keep doing it. It's like,
So when you say you die a lot, is that the challenge is more of a memory game, like the old school ones where you have to learn the map, or is it more of it's more reaction, so it's your how quickly you press buttons to
kind of bit both. So like the general is like your tank control resi kind of thing. It has the worst infantry menu selection, so square and circle change infantry on the fly, but it's like in real time.
Okay.
And
is it worse than
it's horrible.
The Iron Boots and Ocarina of Time.
That was quite annoying. But this is annoying because you have to do it, but there's no way of getting, like, you want a certain thing and you like have to skim through it all with fucking either square or circle just to get to the, like, an item. It's really frustrating. But it's a lot of you'll die a lot on bosses.
Okay. I don't mind dying on bosses.
Because they're all like very old school, like there's a pattern that you have to do. But there's like bits, so the first boss that you do, which is like a helicopter, after that it's a cutscene, and then straight after that you have to run a certain bit to catch a helicopter. But if you're not holding the run button up all the time, so as soon as it boots in, you're just not going to make it. And there's kind of a few things like that, and there's just things where it's like, you're going to die, just trial and error. And there's, again, the memory thing. There's this one with explosions where you had to remember, go through this bridge in a certain way. It's very difficult.
You'll know when Jack's playing Fear Effect on my streams, because you'll just hear him over me shouting and swearing and saying things are rubbish in a slightly stronger term. And
Use your words, say what he says.
Bullshit.
Bullshit.
And that shouldn't work like that. I pressed the button.
We all try to plead with the game like it's going to make a difference. Like, oh no, I'm sorry. Yeah, you definitely pressed that button. That was my bad. Yeah, the game's going to say, hold its hands up and say, yeah, you got me out there, sorry.
Four discs, but it's quite short. It's only like
four discs.
Yeah, but it's, as I said, like the animation and the cutscenes are really good, and the pre-renders are really good, so you can see why. But I think like each disc's about an hour and a half.
Fair enough. So, other than old school games, have you played anything like more recently that someone, even myself included, would have actually heard of or played?
I have, but
someone could relate to.
I may save that for another episode. when I finished it. There's one for next episode.
You can say you're
playing it. Well, Resi 7, I've been playing okay. that. But I'll talk about that next episode because I've nearly finished and I'd rather talk about it.
You want to wait for it to be completed so you've got a full...
Metal Gear. You're still playing that.
That, and I've talked about that last episode, and I'll probably talk. If I kept doing that, I'm going to talk about that game for the next bloody few months because I have big long breaks in it. So
it's a game you can keep going back to. You're on about Metal 5, right?
Yeah.
It's a game you can definitely keep going back to.
And Gravity Rush too, but again, I'll probably.
I didn't play that. That looks fun.
Really good game.
Interesting game, especially if you can get it for like 10.
You need to play the first one. But you can get that remaster.
Yeah.
They brought it to Switch now as well.
Oh, I don't do things like that. Well, I'll definitely buy it.
No, because it's Sony.
I'm pretty sure I've seen it.
No, it's Sony.
I'm going to stop you there. I'm pretty sure they did, but...
Definitely Sony.
Yeah. Whatever!
Only in gaming.
I'm Sergeant Billy McGuire, a radio operator. Are there any other survivors? I'm not sure. But I'm afraid they were wiped out. The terrorists are going to launch a missile. Is there any way to stop them? That screwdriver.
So, recent news. The first thing I'm going to bring is No Man's Sky. 2 years later, Hello Games look to have finally cracked it. So we have recently seen a new trailer that looks like, actually, they are bringing multiplayer to it, finally. Third person ground and ship gameplay. So, I'm not a first person fan, so for me that's great.
Yeah, but sometimes third person can look weird in a first person game, like Skyrim. Fallouts where you go third person and you're basically just walking on air.
When you jump. They never look right in Skyrim when they jump.
No, they don't.
Weird, like, yeah.
From what I've seen, it actually looks like they've done it properly.
Okay.
And it looks like a third person game.
Okay.
I'm hoping it does play like that.
I think it's quite funny as well that they're releasing all this stuff as it moves over to Xbox. So Microsoft are getting the finished product at release.
Yeah.
Whereas Sony, the ones that kind of sold them downriver with the way they market it, have been, you've been fucked by having this really subpar game.
That's karma to Sony, isn't it, for crossplay?
I'm not going to get into it, but I agree with Sony. I can see them...
Get out.
I can see them cross-playing with Switch, but I can understand why they wouldn't want to. Yeah, why they wouldn't want to let Microsoft people join theirs? Why would they want to let the competition catch up?
I feel that's a discussion for another time.
I think it is.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
I think it is.
Anyway, you also get there is unprecedented base building.
I never got the. So I played No Man's Sky when it first came out. Fucking annoying game. But yeah, the base building, I don't understand. The videos I've seen of it make it look like Minecraft.
I've heard it's pretty good. I've not played it, but I've heard the base building's quite...
Do you want to borrow it?
No, I'm alright.
It's
quite... Yeah. I've heard it's quite good.
I've heard
a lot of people really get into the base building. And even people who are not into Minecraft and stuff have really got into base building because it's quite easy.
Mm-hmm.
And quite satisfying to do. The other thing is obviously the graphics overhaul and NPCs running about.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the main thing off the trailer was it shows that potentially going to get a robot dog.
I am sold.
Really?
I'm sold purely on a robot dog. Come on, like, we'll go back to the previous podcast of Andrew WK. I am very pleased about small things. So, moving on, the next story I have found is Epic Games. Now, Epic Games, good old Fortnite creator, dominators of the world, have done something good. After suing 14-year-olds and being sued in South Korea by PUBG, who use their engine to make PUBG, but because that makes loads of sense. Any game now that is sold on the Epic Marketplace, it actually used to be a 50-50 split. So Epic used to get 50% and the developers would get 50%. So you'd think that's pretty fair.
That's still not bad for game
development, yeah.
Not too bad, but Epic Games are making a fair bit of money out of Fortnite.
Does that include all the microtransactions? Is it a 50-50 split on?
Well, it'd be all mainly microtransactions because it's a free game, isn't it? So it'd be sponsorship and.
So it's games that are sold on the Epic Marketplace. So developers now get an 88% cut of it, and Epic Games take 12%.
I like that they picked 88.
88 is a good number. I'm pretty sure that the negotiations started at like 95%/5, and that's where they've ended up.
No, you're sure they're not 90. Yeah, no, we're like, no, we'll go 88.
You sure they weren't just like massive Back to the Future fans and thought they needed to go 88 miles per hour?
Maybe. And also while we're talking about Epic Games and the good old Fortnite, there have been unofficial downloadable cheats for Fortnite. That contain malware. 78,000 people approximately have downloaded this.
78,000.
78,000 to apparently make you aim better and be better at the game.
That's not a lot considering the player base. Well, that would be, you know.
Well, that's just for one specific cheat. Like, there's going to be loads of people out there that are doing mods and stuff.
So it was called Surefire Victory. Which made sense, and I suppose a lot of people would go for that. Yeah. So it was kind of obviously discovered, but there isn't actually a lot they can do at the moment. They haven't managed to find a fix from what I understand. They're still working on it. Obviously, they've now released information about it, hoping that people won't download it. Mm-hmm. But it's finding very difficult to actually shut it down.
There's always cheaters on multiplayer games. It's just the nature of the beast, especially online ones. I mean, you used to get people with lag switches and stuff like that in the Halo days. It's just part and parcel of it all. The whole 88% thing there. I mean, it's like it's all good, but I mean, it's like the Epic have made loads of money already, so it's like,
of course they are. Yeah.
You know what I mean? The guys made Unreal. They made Gears.
Yeah, they're massive.
Done Fortnite.
But it's kind of a good. It's a good statement of intent from them to say that, like, they could just be horrible like anybody else, and the fact that they are getting this money elsewhere means that they can share that with the developers, the people who own it.
I mean, they do cool things anyway. I know, like, if you're a small developer and you use their engine. They're really good at negotiating money, and you can download the engine for free.
Which I was going to say.
So they've always done really cool, kind of cool things anyway. So, you know, they're an alright company, Epic.
Yeah.
The engine's really good.
The engine is really good. You can download a UDK for the Unreal Development Kit for free. You can make games on it, and then it's really easy to actually publish them through Epic, as you say. And it's one of those ones that is really good for developers, and it marries up with exactly what they're doing now with the market share, the share of the money.
Yeah.
To encourage developers and to continue to make games.
Yeah, of course. And I mean, it's all about giving back to the developer. You know, they work so hard to develop these wonderful things that we play. Well, sometimes very wonderful.
Understatement, working our lives.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically live, breathe and eat it.
Especially with the uncertainty in gaming. Yeah. Like, you never know if they're actually going to go ahead with them. You never know if it's going to sell. You spend 2-3 years building something, and at any moment it could get ripped away. We've seen so many stories of studios being forced to close down. So anything that empowers them, anything that helps them.
Yeah, exactly.
Just going back to the cheats, I'm going to call them, the malware.
Yeah.
The cheatware. That's what they're going to call it, cheatware.
I'm happy that they're getting cheated. Fuck them. You try cheating in a game, you deserve to get stung.
Yeah.
It really annoys me when people cheat in games.
It does.
I do like how people are taking it seriously now, to the point it's like getting sued or getting, you know, because it is illegal. Hacking's hacking. Doesn't matter if it's like in a game, you're still hacking something. Yeah. And
you're still stealing, basically.
Yeah. So it's you know, it's good that it is getting to the point now where it's serious, because then it's going to make people think twice. And it's, at most kind of crimes, it's a fairly easy one to pick up. Fairly easy. It's still quite difficult, but it's a lot easier than if someone, you know, like, does a drive-by or whatever. If they're good at drive-by in any way.
The final news story that we have is Microsoft and Xbox. They had kind of announced that they were going to bring new hardware to Gamescom in August. They announced it at E3. So that's now been retracted.
Okay.
We're now getting, we're basically just getting new bundles.
So wait, when you say retracted, do you mean that they pulled the story and said we shouldn't have actually said that? Or that they changed what they've announced? So they were originally going to announce this, and now they're releasing that.
So the words they used when they announced it, it was announced by the Major Nelson blog post. They announced it as hardware and accessories.
Okay.
Now that's saying there's a new console coming. A lot of people.
It could be another Oculus Rift iteration. It could be...
Well, I think they said they're backing out of VR.
Are they?
Yeah. I don't blame it. I don't think it's... People who have been around for the motion controls know that it's just another gimmick. And that it works... It's limited in what you can do, like motion controls. It's good for what it can do. It's great for what it can do, but it's limited. It is a small... peripheral or whatever,
Yeah, they have now changed the wording to say new Xbox One bundles and accessories. So now we're expecting bundles and accessories, which is a lot clearer because obviously some people may have thought that was a new console coming a year after the X has been released. Jack, I believe you've got something else alongside the Xbox.
Well, yeah, they are on the console, right? They are making a new console, they've already said that. Phil Spencer, I think it's for 2021?
I was going to say, 2020? I thought most experts are saying that the next console will be 2020, 2021.
Yeah.
So that's sort of 2-3 years away.
So when he's announced it, he has said consoles.
Plural.
So that's basically, people are speculating if it's going to come out with a standard version and with like an X version off the bat.
I think that makes sense. I think you've seen with the release of the Pro, the X Elite, whatever it's called, there are people want to buy a different type of game. Like if they're only going to play the standard games, they'll get the easy, cheap version. But you've got your extreme gamers that want that can tell the difference between 4K and not, that want to run it at the highest frame rate, that want that extra stuff. Who would pay more?
Yeah, exactly.
That makes sense.
But the one thing I want to know is whether it's going to have HDMI port, because back in the day when the 360 was released, there was a core Xbox 360 that still ran on DVA or VGA, as it's all known as.
It's good that you mentioned that, because it again that's a thing that they have already done. I mean, there was the Core/Arcade version?
I got the arcade version, obviously. So you didn't
get the hard drive with it or anything, so that was
this.
Yeah.
Jesus.
You got a box that had the three red lights of Doom.
I was going to say, I remember the Ring of Death. Was that one, or was that 360?
360.
I mean, they were just made to die. They never going to last. But it's good that you mentioned that, because it's right, they have done that before. So we're probably gonna. I think the thing is with this one, it's more what people are expecting. It's a bigger jump, because obviously the standard Xbox One and the X is a bigger jump. So if they're gonna do that off the bat, it's a weird move. I don't know how it's gonna play out. They kind of, to me, Xbox recently feel a bit like Sega. Like, here's a 32X. Here's Sega CD. They're like just throwing
just
you everything.
Keep buying something. Here's some new stuff. Just buy one of our consoles. Just please, just keep buying.
Buy anything.
Let's bump up our figures. We'll get people buying 3 or 4 of the same thing, just so we can get anywhere closer to Sony.
But also, Microsoft now have the advantage of the cross-play side. So, and obviously with Sony sticking their ground, which I'm not saying that I disagree with, they do have that side for the people who do want to play with their friends who have PCs and they have an Xbox, although that's technically the same thing.
With PCs, that's still Microsoft, so Sony aren't going to mix with them. And we mentioned it earlier, but I don't believe that Sony are going to still do this in the next generation of console.
No.
But in this generation, with them having one Xbox for every 4 PlayStations out there, why would they?
Fallout, I reckon, may have a swing in that.
Fallout 76 will have a massive swing.
Granted, that Bethesda are going to bring it out on the PlayStation, because they are, but I reckon because they want it to be cross-play, I think that may tickle You think you may PlayStation a bit more.
Think you may have to get some studio influences to sort of force their hand by.
Well, the thing is, what's stupid about that is that Sony won this generation by being pro-consumer.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, you know, that E3 where they went, this is how you trade games with your friend.
That was amazing.
They pretty much destroyed Xbox with everything by being pro-consumer. Now that, they're getting the money, they're turning anti-consumer again, which is like, did you not learn from the PlayStation 3 by making really horrible architecture that no one can develop for because you thought you ran the world? And that went to bite you in the arse. Now you're going back to that. You're going to get bit in the arse.
Again, we could talk about this for ages, but I disagree completely about the PS3 and PlayStation. PlayStation released the original PlayStation 3 was backwards compatible. You could change the operating system. You could get Linux on it. It was tied down so anyone could use it anywhere. There were people using PlayStation 3s as supercomputers by having them stacked of about 20 different PS3s.
Yeah, didn't the military do that?
Yeah, military did it. It was a really cheap way of them getting really powerful software, very powerful hardware. They realised that a lot of people were buying the console and not using the console in this fashion, which is part of the reason why they started to move it. But I don't know. Sony don't strike me as a company that aren't going to go with the tide, and if there is such a demand for crossplay, I'd be very surprised if they didn't.
I mean, you can always play Rocket League and Fortnite crossplay.
Yeah, you can.
Sort of on Rocket League.
Yeah.
You can't play with your friends unless it's a private party.
Okay.
No, not crossplay. So you can't join a random match. You have to be on the same platform.
Okay. Think about this anti-consumer, right? So PlayStation's market share is still going to be bigger than Microsoft and Switch just combined.
Yeah, but the next gen could change.
Yeah, but again, no one knows what the next gen is. I mean, a lot of experts out there think that the next gen is probably going to be the last one that is a fully fledged console. And after that, we're looking at about 10, 15 years in the future, where you're probably not going to have a dedicated piece of hardware just for gaming. It's probably going to be part of all of your game PlayStation. PCs and stuff, so...
I think they said that about this gen, though, didn't they?
They did. They did, yeah.
Join us in 10 years' time to have this same conversation again.
Yeah. Probably. Well, not in 10 anymore, is it? It's like, what, 6? It's gone back to the old kind of days, like 5, 6 years.
I was skipping a generation.
No, right. Yeah. I mean, I feel that's the thing, though. I think it is come quite too quick. It's looking like now that it's starting to pick up. Like, it took a while for the 360 and stuff to pick up. And when it picked up, it did pick up. And for like years, it was still improving. I feel like the PS4 and the Xbox One are still improving. And to go just to the next gen already, I feel like...
Yeah, I agree with that. I think with console generations, you have to consider the length of a development for a game.
Yeah.
And how much they can learn about the software, the hardware before they release that. So your first 2 or 3 years, you're going to get people that have started development without using the bespoke kit. So then you're probably not going to get to about 5 years into a generation before people actually know what they're working with and master it and be able to release games like Spider-Man and God of War and that sort of really high quality game that's out there. So
yeah.
I guess time will tell in terms of how the next one comes out, but it's...
Next-gen games, is it going to be sustainable to become a big game developer with how powerful... Well, we'll leave that for another time. I think that's another big debate.
It is indeed. That is it for the news for this
time.
That's
all that's fit for print. There's a couple of things I want to mention. You mentioned you started playing Uncharted. There's the fan film that I recommend everyone watch. Nathan Fillion, who is Nathan Drake. It's really good.
He's not though, is he? Nolan North.
Nolan North is, but you compare Nathan Drake to any other
physical representation. Like him,
he looks like him. He acts like him. He has the same sort of quips and sort of
comedy. Yeah.
Except for a certain friend of ours called Stephen. He looks like.
Every video game character of the 90s and the early noughties.
We call him generic video game characters. He looks like Nathan Drake. He looks like Joel. He,
all of them look the same.
Yeah, he just looks...
Depends what shirt he's wearing.
The best one, he looks like the guy from Shadow Complex a lot as well. Who,
really?
Yeah. So, video game, generic video game character.
Yeah, indeed.
The other thing I wanted to mention is the rumoured developer of the Metal Gear Solid film, if that's actually going to be a thing. Nothing's been confirmed yet.
Apparently pitch's been sent in and the script's been sent in.
Yeah.
So it's waiting for approval.
It's waiting for approval, which is fine. So it's Jordan Vaught Roberts.
Yeah.
You can find him on Twitter and all the other good stuff. But his Twitter feed, he's celebrating the 31 years anniversary of Metal Gear Solid. And every day there's a new piece of fan art, and most of them are so good that you would put them as art on walls or in museums. Even the one that came out recently was of Sniper Wolf being killed. You've got the dogs coming over it. It's like really oil-painted, really thing of beauty. The person that played, the woman that played Sniper Wolf in the film, in the game, really, really recommended it and was blown away by how much she was actually touched by the match of emotion they were able to capture. So if for any artist fans out there, any Metal Gear fans out there that wants to celebrate the 31 year anniversary of the first game, not the PlayStation, the 8-bit, was it NES?
It originally came out on the, not NES, TurboGrafx.
TurboGrafx.
That's the proper Kojima one. It's on the TurboGrafx.
Well, yeah, that 31 years, that's... Shit, that's the same age as I am. Fuck.
Yeah, it is. Not the same age as me.
Yeah.
On the film, onto the film, though, Kojima has like been involved with it and like seen the script, and the director said it's like very Kojima-y, the script as well, so...
That's good.
It's cool. I think Kojima's a fan of his other work, so he did Kong, Skull Island. His first film, which I think was a small kind of films, just opened in Japan, and Kojima like sat and talked about
That's
it
good.
With him. And he's obviously saying how weird it is that he looked up to Kojima so much, and now he's sat next to him, working with him. And
that's quite impressive.
But
Metal Gear is probably one of the few game adaptations that could work in a film.
Oh yeah, yeah, it's cinematic.
It's cinematic as hell. It's build for that narrative, whereas most other games aren't. I mean, we can talk about gaming in films for ages, but
I quite like the first Silent Hill film. It was alright. There's things in it that don't make sense in the Silent Hill universe, like Pyramid Head being in there and stuff like that. But you've got to use him because he's such an iconic character. But all in all, it wasn't Mario Brothers or anything like that. And the first Mortal Kombat, I've got a soft spot for that because it follows the story. It's a fighting tournament, and that's what the film is. And
yeah. And the TV, you watched the Street Fighter TV show on Netflix?
No, but I've watched the Japanese
animes,
which are really, really good.
Yeah, it's live action. It's real martial artists doing the fighting. Actually, the acting, the shitter acting. But it kind of works because Street Fighter doesn't have that good of a story.
And that Jean-Claude Van Damme film's amazing.
All American. Let's get the let's get Jean-Claude Van Damme to play the All American. Yeah, that's
indeed.
That's a great one.
Isn't Balrog like a good guy in it as well?
I think so. Yeah.
Terrible.
Going back to the Metal Gear film.
Mm-hmm.
When the helicopter arrives, is it going to play Aha's Take on Me?
I think they're going to do insert song here where it's different for everyone to play.
Should be.
You'll probably run off the first one, so it won't. But
I was going to say, it will definitely be off the first one, or at least the Shadow Moses or something like that.
Are you going to have to take the tape out or the DVD and then put it back in a different slot?
No, that's not in the first game.
Oh, that'd be brilliant. But then, only if the film starts saying, hey, you recently watched this film, and then you recently watched this film. As long as it was by the same studio as the one that's releasing.
It'd be very interesting to see if there is, like, fourth wall breaking and stuff like that in the film, because obviously that's synonymous with the game. So it'd be really cool if they did do that, like, you know, say you're just watching a film or something, like a codec thing. I don't know. It'd be easy to do, but hard to do, because, again, it's like, you're going to probably do it 2.5 hours max.
Yeah, it's a standard runtime. So, I mean, they prove that they can do it with things like Deadpool and even Ferris Bueller broke the fourth wall. And, yeah. But that's more in a comedy. We're doing fourth wall breaks in a series.
Well, Metal Gear kind of did comedy as well. It was always tongue-in-cheek.
They had tongue-in-cheek elements, but in the main, it was a serious storyline.
Mm.
It was stopping a nuclear war or whatever the fuck was about to take over the world or whatever it was. Everything was sort of different and such, but...
Yeah, definitely. I think that's it for news. Has anybody else got anything they want to add?
I want a drink. My name's Tony. I'm 35 years old. And I'm a video game addict. I started gaming at a fairly young age, you know. Running as round as Sonic and catching Pokemon like. You know, it was innocent enough back then. Looking back though, it was probably those games that, you know, were like the gateway to my addiction, you know. You got to catch them all and the rush of Sonic, you know. Got to go fast, you know. So, yeah, it's probably where it all started.
Like so many people today, Tony carried on playing video games, unaware of the spiral down the shitter.
I think the addiction first started majorly though when I played Halo 2 online. I just couldn't stop playing it, like, you know, controlling the power weapons, you know, that's all you needed to do in that kind of game, and, you know, I just loved it, I just couldn't stop.
For Tony and other game addicts, simply playing the games isn't enough.
Everyone remembers their first time, you know. I just remember playing the games and I couldn't stop thinking of games when I wasn't playing them, and then playing them weren't doing anything, it weren't, you know, giving me the rush anymore. And even now I can, you know, remember it like really vividly. I was just pacing around my bedroom and I clocked it like poking out the shelf a little bit, you know. There it was, Rise of the Robots. And I just thought, you know what, I'm going to do it. So I picked it up and then I smoked it.
This was when Tony's life turned into chaos, like a pebble dash wall.
I just started smoking any game like I could get my hands on. You know, your Mario's, Doom, Little Britain the game. After a while, your tolerance builds up, you know what I mean? So I started injecting games at that point. Excuse me a minute.
At this moment, we see Tony smoking Turok 2, Seeds of Evil.
Sorry, what was on about? Oh yeah, so I started injecting games, you know. We call it Needler. You know what I mean? Like, pass me the needler. Or we call it dual-willed needler, you know, if you got one in each arm. But, you know, I'd rob, sell my body, you know, I'd do anything for a hit of a game. I just, you know, anything I could get my hands on, you know. I even smoked a Wonder Swan in an IKEA car park.
Gamer addiction is a serious killer. Only 2 weeks after our interview with Tony, he passed away, bum dropping bubble bobble.
Just take a break, you know. Read a book or go outside or, you know, smoke some cigarettes. Just don't keep playing games.
Today, we are going to debate physical versus digital. We are all of different opinions. We have Jack, who is very much, I want a physical game. I want to clog up my house with cases. And we have Griggs, who is, I do not have the space for cases.
Well, it's more of I'm starting to shift towards that. I still like the physical media, but convenience is better.
Does that mean you don't have to leave the house?
It means I don't have to get up if I want to change game.
That is the epitome of laziness.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. I'm okay with being lazy if it means for convenience.
Fair.
Yeah. Fair. So, and what about yourself? Which camp are you in? Are you?
I'm kind of on the fence because I have a little digital library. I sound like a PC player now, don't I? I'm not. I have a bit of both. So like when I'm due to stream something, like, and I need it then, I'll buy it online or buy a digital copy. But then I am informed that I need to buy a physical copy as well. So I tend to buy both. Not through choice, but purely the fact that I like digital. Kind of is going to be the future. But I understand the thrill of finding a game that actually may not be that many places. That's even with the current generation. You know, so such as the hack games, Persona games, they generally just fly off the shelves and then you don't see them for like 10 years. And then in 10 years' time, you'll find them at like £200. It's kind of that side of things. So I kind of see both sides to an extent. So I don't really have a side.
Okay. Well, we'll see if that continues at the end of this discussion.
Go for it.
Because we will find a winner to some extent.
Maybe.
Or maybe we will just end up.
Always me.
But there is a cultural shift, and I think that's something that is taken into consideration. And we spoke about the next generation of consoles, and as a hardware developer, as someone who, can, if you can understand the hardware, saving space for having a digital physical disc drive in it will be massive for them. They'll be able to make it so much more powerful, and by not having that space in, like most CCs you get now don't have a CD drive in them because of that. Efficiency, because of that, the amount of heat that's generated from using the CD drive, the computing aspects that is required from having that, it's much more efficient to remove that completely and then have everything digital. But you will lose that side of it that you love, the physical media. So Jack, as someone that loves collecting, what's your thoughts on?
Well, I could talk about both.
Right.
Well, we're going to be here for a while, aren't we? digital gaming has done beneficial things. So it has made a rise of indie gaming.
Yes, it has.
Which, I mean, obviously indie gaming's been around since the 80s in UK with the Spectrum and stuff like that and the BBC Micron. But it has ushered a new kind of era of indie gaming and progressive game designing from people like Toby Fox and Jonathan Blow. You know, these people are making very intricate and, you know, kind of messing around with genres which, you know, people didn't really mess around with before. So it's really
for the labels out there, can you just describe who these people are?
So Toby Fox did... Oh, it's gone out of my brain.
Bye,
Mark. Oh, I'm going to have to have a drink. You know what he did?
Oh, no, we don't know what he did. That's why we're asking him what he did.
Everyone's going to hate me now.
Oh, you don't. Already judging.
Yeah.
That RPG I was playing on the PS4 with the...
Dex? Republic?
No, with the arrows, old school graphics.
Undertale.
Okay, yeah, okay. Heard of that game.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Okay.
That's why everyone's going to hate me. Sorry, guys. I have been drinking, so give me a break.
Of course.
So Undertale, which is, an extremely talented guy who made a very, you know, intricate, meaningful game with that. Very meaningful. And then Jonathan Blow, which if you don't know him, then he's kind of... probably the starter of the usher into this new kind of wave of indie gaming with Braid. I mean, Braid was massive when it came out, and it really
say Mario then, because there's a lot of similarities between Mario.
This is it. It's taken some of the very, it's very quite postmodernist in the fact that it takes something that we already now established from Mario and then switches it around on its head and does intricate things with it, and is Game the Witness, which is a work of genius, very smart game, very kind of easy, but also very difficult, very easy concept of just putting one point to another point. But what he's done with that is he's made it this great piece of art. I'm writing a piece on the start of that, and it's an exposition done really well in video game. It's a very, very smart game.
Well, to just to one more to back that up, I mean, the game that I've been playing, Stardew Valley, that was made by a single person.
Yeah.
And I don't think he'd been able to have done that in a physical world. And if we were 10 years ago, and if everything was being released with a publisher and having to have physical copies, there was no way that that guy could have made that game on his own. And
yeah, so as I said, it's ushered this thing. The other problem with that, though, is now that anyone who downloads Unity can make an asset flip piece of shit of a game and put it on Steam, and there's a chuck full of pieces of shit on Steam that are just getting purchased. I mean, Steam's getting really oversaturated now.
It is, because they've had no validation of any of the games that they've for a long time, so anyone could release anything and it would
I think pretty much you still can. There's no quality control about it. So I think it's like 40 games a day or week or something. It's something like crazy.
I think it's
like
daily. I think there's something like 40 games daily that's being released. There's not enough hours in the day to play all the games that
or seek through it. And the problem is that really good games are now coming out on Steam that are just getting ignored. Nintendo Switch eShop's been really good for that, because there's some quality control, but they are wanting to move to like 40 games a week, which I think is personally a bad move, because again, the reason why the eShop's doing so well is it's because it's not oversaturated. So I think if they go down that path, that's going to be really bad on them.
It's definitely a risk that they have to sort of mitigate in any way. But because you say oversaturation is something that's a real concern, and I don't think the Switch store, the eStore in there, is built to... I mentioned this in the last time, but the UI on the Switch store is not very great. And if you're oversaturating that, and you're going to miss so many good games.
On that, just while you guys are taking breath. So with digital, obviously indie, yeah, amazing. We're getting some cracking games out of the indie market. We're getting some shockers, but we're getting some good ones. But on pro physical, why do things like limited run exist if digital is all the way forward? Why would limited run exist if there wasn't still enough physical collectors out there to be able to continue that business?
I don't think it's ever going to disappear. I think there's still going to be a physical market. Definitely. There's always going to be the collectors. There's always a reason as to why the limited edition of a game gets bought, because you have collectors out there. Yeah. I just think that they're becoming much
and
more of a niche.
They make a lot of money, developers, out of the limited editions. Like, they don't make much... Well, it's isn't it pre-orders and limited editions? Like, the big...
Yeah, they make so much money.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially with the limited editions that don't even sell the game. Like, you can spend 100 and something quid, I can't remember off the top of my head, but there are releases where it's 150 quid package and you don't even get the game.
No.
It's just
that started, didn't it? No, I can't remember what was one that did that. It's like just a box. And it's like, I can't remember what game it was. It was Christmas. I don't know why anyone would do that. But
that, to me, is a big fuck you to the players.
Yeah. But, you've got things like Limited Run, Badlands is another one who do indie games, physical. You also get a manual then.
A manual?
Yeah, manual.
Actually, getting a manual.
Wait, as in, it tells you the controls, it tells you...
Yeah.
That's what I mean.
Oh, that's the nostalgia tickling there. Like, that was one of my favourite things about the old games, where you get a bus into town, you go bit your game, and then on the way back from on the bus home, you read the manual, because you just sat there just buzzing, waiting for it to go in. But back then, you were able to put the game in and play it straight away. You didn't have to put it in and then wait for an update for 2 hours or whatever.
It's fine, you got time to read the book again. time to read the manual and the player's guide.
Twice.
Still waiting for it to do upload.
Yeah.
Don't even get to play it until the next day because by the, you've lost your evening because it's downloading the new update, the new patch before it's there.
Yeah.
Badlands, you get the soundtrack in a lot of their games as well. So it actually comes with the CD soundtrack as well. So they do really good. I mean, the games are usually about £25 because they are small things. So it's a really good box deal.
Is Badlands the kind of, not to say Flappy Birds, but the big black bubble that kind of bounces along? You get, it's like a side scrolling platformer.
No, they're a publisher, Badlands. I think it's called Badland or Badlands, publisher. But they've done a lot of cool games. They've released Axiom Verge. They're the ones who've done the physical version of that. So there is these people who are pressing it, and again, you know, limited run's a big one. Even though I'm kind of a bit like, with the whole limited amount of copies, there's only X amount of these copies you can buy. It's kind of, but the other thing is to that, it's up to the developer if they go with someone else. So.
But that's the publishing world. That is them having to physically make a certain amount of these copies. And you've seen in recent times, I don't have any figures to back this up, but there are plenty of games that have made that don't get sold because they make more physical copies than there are actually people going to buy them. So there's a bunch of physical copies of games that are just sat in a warehouse or having to be returned from retailers because they're unable to sell these games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I get that. However, I don't think, like, physical will never die a death, however much people think it's going to. I don't think it will because, obviously, retro collecting has become such a massive thing. So collecting the good old PS2, PS1 games you used to play, Mega Drive, all of those.
SNES is a big one. SNES is prices and stuff like that. Just
so, yeah, like your old Nintendo consoles, the games for those go stupid money. So even some PS2 games now. But then, you know, in 10 years' time, PlayStation 4 will be in that.
I strongly disagree that anything on PS3 or PS4 is going to be a collector's edition. Even PlayStation 1. I know you guys are collectors and stuff, but I can still go out and get the games that I load from PS1 era, like Metal Gear Solid or Final Fantasy, and I can still get those for about £10.
Yeah, probably. Well, you can if you look hard enough. Which is going to be a point I'm going to go up to, but that's probably online. And if you look hard enough online, you can. But I like to buy I've got quite a fair size collection, as you know. About, I'd say, 10% of that's been bought online, if that. Like, most of my collection's been bought in shops, on markets, because I like the journey. It's like, yeah, any fool can get the rarest PlayStation game of all time if you look hard enough online. But if you physically find it in a place where, like, a market or whatever, there's something ace about that. It's like, wow, like, I've got Chaos Break, which is quite a difficult game to get on PlayStation 1. You know, I found it in the market, I bought that online. It's fairly hard to find online, but I haven't found it online. I've bought it physically in a place, and, like, you know, Echo Knight and Beyond and stuff like that. You know, they're not easiest games to get.
But you're always going to be limited to your location by that method. If you're getting rid of online purchasing, and you're saying that you like physical media and you like the grind or the hunt, let's say, to find these collectibles, you're always going to be limited by your location, by what people have got around you, and you. We're quite lucky in where we are, how you can travel not too far and we can get to markets, like you may have seen from the YouTube video we posted. Can get these sort of games where you can have that sort of car boot style-esque rummaging through to find these classics. But not everyone's able to do that. And I think, you're in a very much of a niche of that sort of market, that sort of enthusiasm.
People go on holidays, but, like, we like to, we went to Cyprus and we went to shops there, so.
You know, thinking about it with
like looking at markets and things like that, you know, for people who maybe do live in more remote locations, don't have that sort of ability, you can still buy physical games on eBay and other sites are available, etc. Mm-hmm. Disclaimer. online bidding sites. Or online sale sites. Yeah. Or pretty much anywhere. You can find most things on the internet. I'm not going to say everything. Most things. So, you know, for those people, you know, it's not ideal to go to a shop for whatever reason. Then that option is there. You're still going to own that physical game.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a game you've always wanted or a game that you've been looking for a while, you can own it. Like, we're lucky in the fact that, yes, we can go to these sorts of events, and yeah, it is the thrill of the chase and it is the thrill of finding these games. However, you know, there is that option there for people. But you still get to own that physical game. You still get to, like, you know, you still get to look at the case and you can, you know, you can see it and you've got a disc and, you
it's
know.
It's tangible.
It's
something you own rather than rent, I think, is a big point of.
And then if you, or if you have a child, they can play DJ on the floor with it.
As my nephew did with GTA to my brother. You just really? Saw him, yeah, on the floor, just DJ scratching it on the floor.
That feels like it's a plus point to the digital side.
Well, yeah, like, that is the problem with physical. They scratch, they break. I mean, the thing is now, most games, once you've uploaded it onto the hard drive, all that disc does is just read that it's that disc. So as long as you've already installed it, if that disc can, well, if the lens can go, yeah, it's that game, even if it's scratched, you'd probably be all right, because it doesn't run off discs anymore.
Mm-hmm.
The disc's just there to DRM kind of thing. Well, not DRM, but...
Yeah, like, it's not D, but it's like
it knows, all right, you own that game kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the ownership thing that you said, Lola, is quite an interesting one, because that's the thing with digital, you actually don't own it. Rights on the PlayStation say, we reserve the right to change or withdraw features, specifications, prices, services, and content at any time, without notice to you. So basically, if you purchase any DLC and then you delete it because you want to, you know.
It's a clear space on your hard drive. If some people like myself bought the PS4 when it first came out, I've only got a 500 gig hard drive space. So I do have to constantly manage the storage within the within the console and delete things to be able to play new things. And that is something that I will admit is an annoyance with digital consoles and digital gaming, but...
I mean, you can re-download them.
You can, of course you can.
Unless you have the playable trailer.
But, This is it. You say that, but I mean, it happened with an X-Men... No, not X-Men, Marvel Alliance on the 360.
Mm-hmm.
Or that, because the license changed, that's no longer available. So again, most... terms and conditions when it comes to digital will have something that says something similar to this. You may access the item you are you ordered through your account that you used to order the item. Until such time as we remove the item, you are solely responsible if you do not choose to download or access the content before it is removed or your license expires. And for ongoing storage and safekeeping of the content, we are not obliged to provide you with a replacement copy for any reasons. If you look in most digital download things, that's pretty much what they will say. So you don't own that game, you don't own that content, you pretty much have the right to play that content.
Without getting too philosophical, but do you ever really own anything? Do we ever... really own any media that you buy online? Do you ever really?
Well, I own the games I buy.
That's not limited to gaming. That's any sort of digital media.
Yeah,
like if you buy something on any sort of film or any sort of music on Apple or Amazon or anything like that, you're still just renting it. You don't own any of that, and that's the way that digital is, because ultimately and this is back down to ownership, but that is still going to be hosted on a server somewhere. That company still has to own it, still have to manage it, and still have to support that server upload. You see with a lot of games that cannot no longer be played anymore because they stopped publishing the servers. So there's been quite a few big games in the last year or so that have stopped being able to be played because they can't keep up with the servers. So if you had a physical media of that and they can't host the servers anymore, you're still adhering to that policy there.
A lot of that there would be multiplayer games.
Yeah, true.
So but if it's single player game though, that still can happen, what I just read.
Of course.
With a physical base, that you can still play it. Unless it's like something that's a piece of crap when it was released and it had to have hundreds of patches to make it playable, then yeah, you're stuck in a rut with that one.
The flip side and like sort of pro digital thing now is how many games in the current generation have that replayability?
I don't think there are many.
So
there's not many that you're not going to have time to go back to because there's always new stuff coming out.
Exactly. The games are getting released so quickly now that, you know, you play a game, you may finish it if you're really lucky before the next great game comes out, that, you know, you're not going to play it again. So you're going to play it, enjoy it or hate it, and then you're going to move on to the next game. Whereas, like, you know, for the physical side, you're going to enjoy playing those older games because they're part of your childhood, because they're part of your past, your history. Like, I can personally say, PS4-wise, there's not many games I will play twice.
No, I agree with that. There's not many PS4 games that I would want to go back to. Not wouldn't want to, because there's a lot that I want to go back to, but I just don't think I will. I don't think I'm going to have the time to go back to, because, again, there's going to be a constant stream of new games coming out.
Don't worry about that, because they'll do a remaster for next gen anyway, so you'll get a second chance to play it.
Exactly.
Because, let's be honest, this generation, there's a hell of a lot of remasters. How many original games really is there? Not half as much as you probably think. Especially at the start of the generation.
How many remasters have we had? And how many?
A lot,
right? Okay.
Yakuza's here is Uncharted. Not Uncharted. Uncharted. Last of Us.
Bioshocks.
They did. GTA. They remake God of War 3 or remastered that slightly. Shadow of the Colossus.
Yeah. That was a ground up remake. I will give credit.
Yeah, the same with kind of Crash Bandicoot to an extent.
Yakuza was kind of ground up.
If they're remakes, like rebuild from scratch,
yeah,
bottom up, that is different to a port.
This is true. So, like, Last of Us,
Yeah, and that's just them trying to...
Uncharted.
Again, that's just them trying to sell something to a new market.
It's amazing, Rocket Dog.
Or it's cheap to do. Naughty Dog. It's content for a console.
They've already got that material, they've already got that work that they put in, and they're reissuing it. I have no problem with them doing that.
It's paid off for Nintendo, because, I mean, the Wii U did so crap.
Yeah,
that they've ported loads of Wii U games, and now, like, I think the opening week of Mario Kart sold more than Mario Kart did on the Wii U.
In its entire life cycle,
Wii U.
And it's exactly the same game.
It was the deluxe version.
Sorry, you can put a fancy name at the end of it.
Exactly!
What they've done with Donkey Kong is a bit shady. They like put it as a full price game. It's like, come on, Nintendo. Okay, yeah. That's a bit...
I'm not defending their pricing. I cannot defend the pricing structure of a remaster. I think that a bottom-up remaster should probably go for...
Foolish price.
You can do that because it's actually had a development cycle. If it's a port, then... You can't charge any more than, you know, £20
for it. I'd be happy to pay for it. If it's a good port, if it's a solid port, £30, I'd be happy to pay.
I mean, when the Bioshock collection was brought out on PlayStation 4, that was, on day of release, I picked that up for £25.
So did I.
And I thought that was fair.
Three games.
They have been had something done to them. And, you know...
Well, the first one did. I don't think the other two did. But, I mean, it's still three great games.
They are
that you can play on current gen.
Yeah.
They are replayable. I've gone back and played Bioshock 1 from that collection before I got to Bioshock 2. One of my mates told me he'd never played it before, and I was like, nah, mate, you've got to go play that now. But this is the difference. I got that physical, like, because I really like that game. And I'm not taking away from physical that with new games coming out that... If it's a game that I really like, I will buy it physical just because I kind of respect it. But if convenience will take precedent, God of War, I really liked the idea of having a physical copy of that because I respect Santa Monica Studio for the work that they did, and it was a beautiful game. But I was able to get that digital. I was able to queue it up before I went to work on the day it came out, and by the time I got home, it was out. And when you bought it digital, you got the artwork as a collection. You got a load of extra stuff, which you don't get in physical content of new games. The artwork in new physical games is no longer an art form. Like, look at Becoming Human, is that the...
Detroit Becoming Human.
The front cover of that was a black wallpaper with white writing that said, Detroit Becoming Human. And within, when you open that up, there was fuck all in it, other than a disc. Right? And you can tell that they clearly don't give a shit about the physical medium. And that's the way that this industry seems to be going towards.
That's the problem. I think that's probably a reason why physical gaming has maybe declined, because they have stopped giving a shit. As before, we used to get good. I used to love, like you said earlier, scrolling through the booklet. Mm. I mean, like, when you're younger, you know, or especially like me, where you live in a town that's fucking nowhere.
You had a sign that said to nowhere.
Pretty much.
Royston Vasey, you'll never leave. We had to get buses to places. So sitting on the bus on the way back home, reading through the booklets, looking at the weapons, looking at the things you could do, was exciting. Looking at the back of the cover, the artwork, and that's gone. And so I don't know the kids of today. I think that's the other problem. They're used to just having things. They've got no patience, and I think that's the generation today have no patience. They want it now. Digital, offer them that
instantly.
I mean, there's a generation of people out now that don't know. They've never waited to see a photo. They've never waited for a photo to be developed.
Yeah,
took a photo. They've seen it. They've not had to sit for a week like, oh, I better pick up them pictures.
It's quite funny you mentioned that, because there's quite a few videos on the internet. I think there's kids, I can't remember what it's called, I can't remember what it's called. But it's basically kids these days playing something from back in the day.
And yeah.
About to say, you really want to be careful how you...
I was debating how to phrase that, but there was this one really adorable one where this kid was given a Game Boy.
Riggs.
Oh, it was cute. Like, this kid, she was given a Game Boy and she didn't understand how you turned it on. She didn't realise that the buttons were there. She was trying to press the screen and she just couldn't understand that you had to have buttons and actually physically...
Flick the top.
Yeah.
It's a little lock.
Couldn't understand it. So, going back to the artwork, the point, the purpose of having physical media, and not going backwards, because I want to talk about that as well, in terms of old games and emulators and such stuff, but in terms of from this point on, that game's coming out, what benefit do I have from buying it physically over than I have with digital? Is there something that I get from having a physical copy of, let's say when Spider-Man comes out, that's the next game I'm going to buy, honestly. Yeah. What benefit would I have buying that physical over buying that digitally?
I mean, personally, I'd like to buy it physical just because I like it to look at a pretty case.
Okay.
But, I mean, there's no real benefit of buying it physical. It's just if you prefer it that way, buy it physical. If you prefer it digital, that you can just leave it in the morning, go to work, come back, it's ready, then that's great. There's upsides to both, you know. I enjoy going to the shop on day of release and going, yeah, I've still got it. Oh, here's my pre-order. And I've got it, you know, Nintendo Labo. How's that doing, Jack?
Yeah, it's going great.
It's shots, still boxed.
Shots fired.
Still sealed. Wow. On top of the wardrobe.
Have you seen the competition that they've done there with that? Nintendo did a competition of, like, people programming stuff on Labo. Mm-hmm. And some of the things are pretty ace. Should check that out, people. Okay. Everyone moaned about the Labo. Look at what you can actually do with the Labo. It's quite impressive.
What have you made?
I've made nothing.
You made a mess? Or you
know, no, I've just not took it out of the box yet.
Wow. You've not taken the cardboard box out of the cardboard box?
No.
Wow.
Or the game out of the cardboard box.
Okay. That's the thing, there's programming in it and stuff. Everyone can go, it's expensive. No, you can program and stuff. The things you can do with it is very impressive if you know what you're doing. You'd like it.
I'm very much looking forward to it. Like, I'm very much looking forward to when my nephew's a couple of years older and using the Labo as something, as a way of teaching him how to build and make stuff in it.
We have a sealed one. You can have that. Because Jack ain't having God of War until he's played with it.
Oh, really?
My money, I do what I want, bitch. But back to your Spider-Man, as we digress.
Yeah, well, this is it. Like,
again, for me, it's just ownership.
Ownership of the...
I own it. Okay. Nothing can take that away except for a thief or, like, you know, someone breaks it. That game's mine. I own it. I like something tangible. Again, I buy vinyl records. I buy DVDs, Blu-rays. You know, I like ownership.
I'll give you vinyls because the sound quality... I really love books. Like, I have more books physically than I do digitally.
The boy bought a dictionary.
The boy bought a dictionary. Who? Me?
And a book of quotes. And a book of...
And a thesaurus.
And origins of words.
There are many a search engine that you can use that could be your dictionary.
Yeah, I still use the search engine because it's more easier to... it's right there while I'm writing.
So how is your physical compared to digital?
In that manner, it is better for physical books.
That's a different medium altogether.
It is, but I was just dropping that in just to shot fire.
It is. And
I just want to establish myself as a writer. You have to have a dictionary and stuff.
You do. And with books, without digressing too far, who reads more than one book at once?
Well, that's it.
Like, why would I want to have 20,000 books available to me? No, I'm going to read one book until I finish it, and then I'm not going to go back. I'm not going to jump between them like I do with gaming. Like, that's not how reading works.
Friend Louise, she had a Kindle when it first came out. Mm-hmm. And she was like, oh, look at it, isn't this great? And I went, yeah, but someone's going to rob that. She went, well, yeah. I was like, no one in the right mind's ever going to rob a book.
I would.
No thief is going to, like, what you got in here? Is that a book? Is that H.P. Lovecraft? Yeah, I'll get loads of money. No one's ever going to rob a book.
I would
ever.
Love to hear if anyone's ever had a book stolen. Like, doesn't seem like it.
We're not having it autographed, like, sealed books or anything. I mean, like, normal
editions.
Boring books.
Yeah, boring
disclaimer,
books.
Disclaimer, I did rob loads of Goosebumps books from school once when I was, like, in juniors.
Send the police.
That's different. Because
there's a few books I've not returned back to the library.
Again, that's different. That's
you. Did you hear about the guy who got like a 20 grand fine for that?
Yeah, they won't fine me.
But you pay your taxes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. It's like 21 fines. Whatever. I'm just going to
drop.
Yeah, I know. I'll just buy the book and you can have it. Like, I'm not paying 20 grand for a fucking book. I'll buy the book and it's there. The book costs.
The book probably has the price at the bottom of it on the
back
because they always did.
Can check them all.
Yeah. So, going back to gaming in terms of. So, as people that clearly love retro gaming and really love having those physical media. One of the things that I plan on doing in the future is building an emulator, building a console, a machine that can play all of the NES, Mega Drives, and stuff as an emulator. I will still definitely have the gamepad for them because that's the hardware, not the actual game. But that seems so much more convenient to me to be able to play those old games in one small way rather than having to own hundreds of thousands of unique different ones.
Emulators are good, especially for capturing and streaming. It's more beneficial. I mean,
of course, yeah. But
I was playing Ocarina of Time about a year ago, and it died at the spirit. Well, yeah, the game just fucking died at the spirit temple and wiped my save. So that was a bastard.
Oh, that's a bad part.
I do
die.
Have the the legendary edition of Wind Waker, where I've got Ocarina of Time on there, so I can play it on GameCube where I can save it and everything, so that's fine. So I'm going to do that next time I play it. But emulator's good for that, but emulator's still an emulator. It doesn't run like the physical copy, especially, I know you're not bothered, but in the speedrunning community, emulators don't count for shit.
No, they don't. like, have you seen the King of Kong? You've seen the film King of Kong, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, the guy that broke all the records of that, all of his world records were rescinded because he was using an emulator rather than the actual arcade machine. So,
and emulators do run differently to the arcade. They have different RNG and stuff like that. And so, emulators, you know, they are cool for what they do, but I like... I like to get it because sometimes with emulators you get the sound can be shit and it can it runs different. I've got one of them portable Mega Drive things.
Okay.
Is it AG Games or something? I can't remember what the company was called. And that it weirdly it's like done like Sega have gave it the approval, but yet say it says about like you can download ROMs and whack it on a thing, so it's like you're kind of promoting illegally having these games, but mm-hmm. I don't know, it's weird. That's some of the sounds on them emulators are
so again it
really
goes back
bad.
To the quality, doesn't it, like that's the
of the emulator and the ROM, it's two different things. Sometimes the emulator can be a bit crap which makes ROMs not run good, but you could have a crap ROM. Lion King, just every ROM I downloaded of Lion King game didn't work.
Yeah, that's disappointing. I guess that's a good point.
So, I mean, you might work on a different emulator because obviously I'm only stuck to that one emulator with that because it's built in.
Yeah, it's hardwired.
Built in the hardware, but you know that's another thing. But again, emulators, I'm cool. Like MAMEs are cool. I remember, you know, playing the MAMEs on my dad's mm-hmm. Mac when it was like, you know, first time I ever heard of it when I was like what, 13, 14 or something, playing like Tron and stuff. Old arcade games, so yeah, there's, you know, emulators are alright.
So it's again, it goes back to the quality of the actual of the game, and you lose that from emulators. You don't lose that from new digital consoles, new digital games. And I've not heard anything really that would convince me to buy, let's say, Spider-Man in physical rather than in
own it.
But what happens, you know, if you buy a game
mm-hmm.
and then for whatever reason you don't get time to play it, or you know, real life does happen sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
Next gen comes out, mm-hmm. you buy next gen. What if you can't download that? You're gonna have to keep that console, and you're gonna have to keep all that content on there.
If I want to play a 3-year-old game again,
just put it out there. If it's a good game and you haven't played it, you know, like for example, you buy Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get time to play it, but you still want to really play it. And, you know, I'm just kind of putting it out there that if you get a new next gen, they may not allow you to have that older game on there.
So without going too much into business strategies, I think it's quite obvious that when Xbox have noticed that they need to be backwards compatible to do that, Sony are probably going to do something similar and making sure everything's backwards compatible. Steam are already running them away with the market in terms of the amount of content that they've got on there. I think Nintendo are also trying to get NES and all
they're
of their
really
old games.
They're really shady though, Nintendo, because mm-hmm. I mean, think about all the games on the virtual console that you purchased on the Wii. You can't take that to the Switch and stuff.
Yeah,
so stuff like that. They've been a bit behind on that. But
Nintendo are massively behind on a lot of that stuff. But the rest of them seem to, that's the way that the market, the industry is shifting towards this availability and all stuff. So, but if I miss a game and I don't play it because something gets in the way, like life gets in the way, and 3 years down the line when the next one comes out and I've not played that yet, there'll be other games.
True, but I like going back. I mean, there's so many games on consoles, it's like finding hidden gems, I hate that kind of term, but you know, everyone seems to use it. Hidden gems on like the PS1 and 2, especially PS1 and 2, because their catalogues are so big. There's so many games in there that people just didn't know about until like now, until the collector scene's like, oh, have you played this game? And people are like saying that. And there's some ace games that just people don't talk about that you can just find. Granted, they are, some of them are hard to find. But, you know, that's another thing that I kind of like doing. And
that's
again,
a game
a lot
in itself, right?
Yeah, and a lot of these types of games, like, you know, Bajengai on the PlayStation 2, you know, Sony are probably never going to put that on the market. I think they might have actually done that. That was a bad representation. I think they actually did do that on that one. But, like, a lot of them types of games, like, some of them just won't ever go on a digital thing because either the company and the publisher have gone bust
mm-hmm.
or, you know, just something like that, or it's just not popular enough. So, to, you know, get them games and play them, and, you know, that's cool.
It is. And I'm not taking anything away from owning those sort of. Definitely that nostalgia.
Nostalgia is a big thing for physical.
For 100%. That's exactly what it is. And that's. That's the only thing that pulls me towards owning a physical thing. One, you saw me, ownership is definitely a big thing that sells you towards physical. I don't think owning them as a piece of artwork counts anymore, not the way that they used to.
No.
I mean, if you think of, like, Ico, was one of the most iconic sort of cover arts that I've ever seen.
In England, have you seen the American cover art?
No.
If no one has, just Google the American cover art for Ico. That is something fucking else, because it was released first in America and they just had to bodge job it, and there's a reason why it didn't sell well in America.
I don't bet that's because of the art form, right? The art.
Yeah, because the original, the UK and like Japan artwork was done by the creator, Ueda. He did the actual cover for it.
Yeah, look at that. That's a thing of beauty, right?
Yeah, that's ours. Yeah,
the little image with the
Now check the North American one.
Right, let's see. Follow at home if you can, people. Oh, holy shit! Are you serious? That's not even the same person as in the game.
Look how cheap it looks.
Who's the girl? Who's this?
That's meant to be Yoda.
She's not like Yoda. That.
Yoda. Follow me, my child.
Wow. Yeah, I can see why this failed.
Yeah.
I always wondered why it didn't get so much of the recognition it deserved. I know why now. Physical media sold it downriver. That's what happened. If it was all digital, it wouldn't have had that problem.
No, it would have just got outshadowed by some asset flip bullshit.
Yeah, it would have. It would have been outsold by, you know, GTA or something. No one would have seen it. But so, is there anything to other than ownership? What?
Look, at the end of the day, the future is going to be digital, and mm-hmm. there will be no physical. And I don't even think they will be digital. In the aspect of you buy a game, you download it, it will be like the Xbox Game Pass.
There we go. Took a minute, but you got there in the end.
And it will be like, I reckon it will be like streaming services, or it will be like an Amazon Fire Stick or something like that. So you'll buy a Sony dildo stick or whatever it is. And, you know, it will be something like that, or an Xbox, you know, crab ass. That you put in, you know, your fucking...
The games of a service sort of model.
Yeah, because it's all going that way anyway. I mean, games are... I hate that fucking term. It's live services now. That's what they've changed.
Oh, is that what the official term? Like, give it a minute and they'll change it to something else.
Yeah, because games of service has got bad connotations. So, I reckon it will all be like that. Unfortunately, because, again, it's... But the generation's changing. We're old. That's the problem.
You speak for yourself.
Hey, I speak for me. I'm old, yeah. Sure.
You're only as old as you feel. I'm like still 17 and a half.
Well, me coughing much. Now, I feel like I'm dying. But we're also, you know, the thing is, the generation now want it now. They've got no patience and they can't fucking hold a game and on a bus and wait. They just have everything at a stroke of his fingertips, which I think is going to be the downfall. We're getting really philosophical here. This is going to be the downfall of humanity. That's how I feel about
it. Without going too much into philosophical. The
I'm on a drink. Let me speak, God damn it.
All I've got is a Queen song in my head now. I want it all.
The instant gratification is something that is a burden that's the new generation have to live with. And games are going to reflect that. And... I don't know. As much as I like having a physical copy, I do still buy most new games that come out. If I have a choice, if I'm paying the same price, I'll pick the physical one just to have an offer of it. But call me lazy. I don't like...
Yeah, we will.
Yeah, I don't like getting up and having to change the disc.
Mate, like, you live like fucking 5 minutes away from a game and a Granger game.
Granger Games closed down.
Yeah, Granger Games closed.
CEX is still there.
Yeah, it closed down quite a while ago.
So 5 minutes away from a game and a CEX, and you can't be arsed to fucking... You literally go downstairs, walk fucking a few minutes, and you're at a fucking CEX and a game, and you're like, I can't be, but I just, you know, I'm lazy. Fucking too right, you're lazy.
We have to drive 12 miles to our local CEX.
Strange, it should be the other way around. Yeah, it should be the one that's pushing for physical, because I can just get it straight away.
Now that journey, baby, it's about that journey.
Are you still there on the way home, just reading the manuals of these games?
I do.
He does, he's like, don't put the games in the boot. Why are you putting them in the boot?
I have to have him in a flick.
He's like, hang on a minute, I want some of them out. And I'll just get that, and I'll get that. And
look at him,
you didn't want to read the manual for Spice World. I was a bit surprised.
Fuck Spice World, I hate that piece of shit.
Alright, so closing statements, I think, is something. Have you got anything to...
It's going to be, I mean, as much as... I think we've, as long as there's companies like Limited Run and stuff like that, there will be physical games. But I think, personally, it will be like Game Pass or something like that.
Netflix sort of streaming sort of model, whereas you have plenty of different available. You pay a subscription service and you get a certain amount of games.
It works for Netflix.
It does work for Netflix, and everyone seems to be following that
and
model.
Prime and, you know.
Amazon are doing it, and Disney are doing it, DC are doing it, Hulu, all those other ones.
Is that Disney or Fox?
No, Disney are releasing their... This is why... So Disney pulled away all of Disney's content from Netflix and Amazon and Hulu, and they're releasing their own service in a few months, I think it is, where they're basically going to have all of their catalogue, all of Star Wars, all of Marvel, all of that stuff on their service. And if anyone has children, they're probably going to buy that service.
Yeah,
with like AAA gaming getting less, more and more unsustainable, you know, if a big AAA game flop, that can ruin a company.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? It can close down companies.
Yeah, it has.
And it has. I think the push for like a subscription-based thing without having to worry about a physical and printing and an extra cost, then yeah, it's going to go that way. Because games, again, the next generation is going to be more powerful. There's going to be people who work in the company who just animate skin or whatever. You know what I mean? It's that crazy now. Like, yeah. I work at the arm hair division of, you know, Uncharted 89 or whatever. And, you know, I make sure that the arm hair waves in the wind properly and stuff. And it's just that crazy.
The promotion is going to be the fire department.
You know, it's...
One day I'll get to that fire department.
Yeah. Master the fire and water. Water. That's
clouds.
That, you know,
wasn't
what I mean?
There the, do you ever see the, sorry, just cut in, but there was,
It's all right, you just carry on, you know, have a conversation or anything.
Well, no, because you kind of reminded me of something that I saw in the...
We weren't doing a podcast today,
yeah,
all right.
Get on with it, you know.
But,
we ain't got all day.
Bethesda were doing a, there was an interview I saw with some people from Bethesda, and there was a guy that's worked at Bethesda for 15 years or 20 years on each console, or each iteration of Elder Scrolls, and all he's ever done is made trees. Like, that's been his job for 20 years, is to make detailed trees, and that's who he is.
They weren't even that good trees.
No, they weren't.
But all in all, I think, yeah, it's going to go to Game Pass, because it is unsustainable, and games are getting too powerful, and there's got to be a limit where it's like, they can't get any more powerful, because, again, it's going to get something crazy, like, oh, I'm working on the new Uncharted where, you know, I'm making fucking pubic hair in his trousers that you don't even fucking see. You know, it's just that nuts now. It's just like, you got to just tone it down. Stop with the graphics. Just make a good game and make it.
I think we're seeing enough people making good games without having to go through the publisher route. And for me, there's the convenient aspects as a selfish way of doing it. Instant gratification and ease of use is definitely something that drives me toward digital over physical. As a someone that kind of can understand the game development process, removing the publisher from the equation saves them a ton of money. Can go into hiring better people, better staff to make it a better quality of games.
It depends on the publisher, though. Publishers are crap. I mean, you've got Devolver Digital, who are quite a cool publisher.
I meant more in terms of the actual physical publishing, the media, the print, the actual...
Yeah.
That whole process.
Look at Hellblade.
Yeah.
Look at how good that game is. Mm-hmm. It didn't have a massive budget. Yeah, okay, it had a good team behind it, but it didn't have a massive budget.
Oh.
But they haven't published it, which is probably where they've saved the money.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, that company had already made a name for itself. They've done some pretty good games. I mean, Enslaved, one of the best games of the last generation that no one played. It's really good. That
it was
that
a shame
ending.
As well, especially if they had Andy Serkis as the...
Yeah, he
you'd have thought that name would have been able to have brought more attention to.
But that was probably, it's good that you mentioned that game, because again, it's probably one of the last.
Yeah, it was.
Last middle
hidden gem mid, there.
Well, no, yeah. Middle tier game. There's not a lot of that anymore.
Hmm.
And there should be a lot more middle tier game. I might have talked about this in the last podcast. I don't know. I might be repeating myself.
It's all right.
But
it might not even make the cut.
Well, cheers.
Still half of his won't make the cut.
Well, yeah. I meant on the last podcast because I'm still editing that cunt. So
you know, middle tier
words.
Not enough, not well, I'm onto the rum now. So what can you say?
Parkour, parkour.
Not a lot of middle tier games anymore. Like Demon Souls came from a middle tier game where it was like, you know, and stuff like that. So,
so wow. I think both Jack and I have made our arguments. I think Lola, I think you're the swaying vote, as someone stated at the beginning that you were on the fence.
I am still on that fence.
Still on that fence.
I mean, obviously, like digital is gonna be like the future. I mean, I like what Nintendo have done with the SD cards. I think that's really innovative. That was quite, I said that first time.
You did.
Well done, me. Can't say that word normally.
See, I don't like that. I don't like having to physically put the cartridge into the
Switch. It's such a hard life for you, isn't it?
I don't understand.
Why don't you just try and eat the cartridge?
I will. After you told me the what it does, right? But I would much rather put a memory card in that slot and use that space for more memory to have digital games.
Or just plug it in an external hard drive.
Well, how are you going to carry that around with you?
Well, you don't have to. You just, you know, just make sure you move things around.
Well, I have to carry my Switch and a thing.
No, you just move the storage around.
Okay. Still.
That took you a while to get what she was getting with it. Like, what do you carry a thing around? Like?
Manage your apps.
He's on the room.
Inadvertently supported my argument, though.
Yes, I did.
Well, you could move things around on a hard drive, or you could just take your cartridges and, you know...
Your little cartridge bag. And
well, yeah.
Cartridge bag, that's to see.
You get a little cartridge thing that comes with your Switch bag, it's great.
Mate, you want to see the fucking old school like Game Boy bag? I had it.
Oh, no, I had old school gaming bag, Game Boy bags and carrying that stuff around. That was fun. I remember the actual physical plastic cases that you got to put your... protective cases. That was really cool.
I've got
but again, I was a child then and I was fascinated by anything and everything.
Are you actually adulted now?
So they say. I don't think so.
I'm not sure.
I've got a Switch bag, but the problem is it does say Nintendo Switch on it, so it's like, yeah, cheers Nintendo.
It's kind of like when the iPhone came out. And
I'm pretty sure I said this last podcast.
Probably don't.
You did.
But yeah, kind of like when the iPhone came out and they had the white headphones, everyone was like, I know what you've got. Like,
yeah,
it's like, an advertisement. So.
Get me mugged.
Yeah.
So, final word, I think it's just down to personal preference. It is for me, you know, I do
cop
it.
Out.
Still Corbin and sitting on that fence, are we?
I like the fence. It's where the birdies sit.
I think you've been playing too much Fortnite, that's what I think.
Fortnite! Give me a shopping trolley. let me get on that grind.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I mean, I just enjoy physical, but unfortunately I don't think it's going to carry on. So, you know, digital's the way forward. I like the ease of digital. I like the fact that I don't have to speak to a person,
mm-hmm.
because I'm extremely anti real life people.
It's called an introvert.
I think we
all are introverts. The majority of us are.
I think with limited run and stuff, I think they've shown there's a market for physical games.
I think there always will be. I think there will always be a collector's edition of stuff. And I really hope there is, because I think it helps promote the artwork and the artistic merit of the designers. Not just from the actual designs, but sort of the gameplay and all of that good stuff. And I hope that it continues, and I hope that they're able to put that 3D modeling into the statues, and they can keep doing that merchandising. I know it sucks for a lot of it, but I still think there is a genuine reason to buy a product that's affiliated with something that you're passionate about. And I think there should always be that medium, but it's gonna continue to be a niche. And I would be very surprised if in a few years' time there won't be.
It will be like Game Pass. I think it will go that way. I think everything... As probably in the future, if we're really looking ahead, I think everything will just be a weird fucking ecosystem that runs off your phone onto what Xbox and Windows really want to happen.
What they're trying to do, and what I think they probably will do.
It will be like that, and everyone will nosh each other off and get into a room and fucking have a big khaki party with each other, and you know, they'll all be friends and everything will all run in this crazy ecosystem, and everyone will be poor and these guys will live in a cloud and sure. You know, fucking have Phil Spencer's brain in a tank and he'll live forever and ever. So you know, I think that's probably what's going to happen.
Okay, so Loda, have you been swayed from either side of it, or you think you're still sitting on that fence?
I like the fence. I do like the fence. I'm going to see what happens. I'm very open to either.
I think we can all probably agree on one thing, that in games coming out in the next few years or new releases, digital's probably going to be either the way that the industry push you towards, or it's going to be more convenient for each of us to use.
Yeah.
And that's probably going to be more favourable to the majority. But going backwards, I know I mentioned emulators, but going backwards, having that nostalgia, I think we're of that generation that actually really enjoys it. I think we're of that generation that was born, that grew with gaming.
Yeah.
So we're always going to be hung by that nostalgia. So I think definitely physical going backwards is the way to go, but going forwards, I think digital is the only way that's going to proceed. And we're going to see fewer and fewer big developers put any pressure into delivering something physically.
No, that's fair. Jack, have you got anything else to say on the matter, without digressing?
Oh, brave new world.
Brave new world. All right, cool.
Cool.
Well, I got to thinking about the first girlfriend. And she's real, honestly. It's not just my wrist.
Okay, so payday purchases. Griggs, what are you going to be buying when you get paid?
For me, it's not going to be a new game that I purchase. I'm going to revisit a game that I completely missed. I'm going to take advantage of the fact that it's released on the Nintendo Switch. And it's a game that you've been telling me I should be playing this game for years. So Bayonetta 1 and 2 is now on the Switch. You can get them in a bundle.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to revisiting both of those games and seeing what I've missed and finally listening to your
godlike opinion.
TBD, to be decided. Like, if I after I've played it and if it's as good as you say, then you may get some credit saying godlike opinion.
It is.
Is that good?
yeah.
Is that good?
Bayonetta, like, a lot of people really cite 2 as a pinnacle. I personally prefer 1.
Right.
I think the bosses in 1, I think when we mentioned this in the last podcast, are a lot better. Just a lot more fun, a lot more diverse. But yeah, it's just action game at its best. As I said, we've kind of like when Devil May Cry came out on the PS2. It was like, wow, this is action game. We've hit a new era of action game. That kind of does that feeling for last gen, or probably even this gen as well. What Devil May Cry did on the PS2, it really is just it's up there. And Bayonetta is a lovable character. She's funny. She's cool. It's adolescent as well. It's just fun. Fun, and that's it. It's just a hell of a lot of fun.
And I'm missing a fun game, a hack and slash.
Yeah.
It was a game that was a genre that I grew up enjoying, and I don't think that you get much of it. Like, God of War, in many ways, is a hack and slash, but it doesn't seem in the same sort of ilk. So, looking forward to playing that, looking forward to seeing what I've missed, and looking forward to hopefully prove you right.
There's replayability as well, so like to do each segment without getting hit, you get pure platinum.
Don't tell me there's a score system in this game.
Yeah, of course. And that's what I mean.
I'm not going to be able to play this once through. Am I? I'm going to have to replay every fucking level over.
Yeah, you'll have to do it again because like you have to kind of level up a bit as well.
Oh, there's a leveling system here.
No, and yeah. There's like challenges that you can do, which will
skill tree?
Do your health and also do like this special kind of meter. That's all that will level up. But okay. It's good to do that and then go back because then obviously you can do more better stuff. There's like crazy torture moves and stuff.
Okay.
It's just just play it. And okay. You'll love it. If you don't love it, then I'll punch you in the face.
So it's either admit that you were right or get punched in the face.
And it'll be in the nose as well. It'll be proper in the nose.
Like, that's the ultimatum that you're putting down, right? Okay.
But I know you'll like it because if you don't like it, there's something seriously wrong with you because it's platinum, sure. platinum, kill it. It's them and Grasshopper. Like it's like the bad boys from Capcom went to them.
Nice.
So yeah.
And as I mentioned previously, I really really loved Nier Automata, and that's given me enough confidence to
want to go back. Don't expect that level of story in Bayonetta.
No, it wasn't that. The story was great, but it was the gameplay that really sold that game. I'm really looking forward to that. Lola, what about yourself? What's your payday purchase or payday or next games play?
Probably going to be Uncharted 2.
Uncharted 2? So, I'd love for you to tell me what happened with Uncharted 2, because I never played Uncharted 2.
Yeah, I do stream.
Okay.
You can watch all the streams, it's fine. Uncharted 2 is actually the one with the most chapters, if I remember rightly.
Okay.
Oh my gosh, does it go on? You feel like you're just nearly at the end,
mm-hmm.
and then no, you're at a new chapter, and then you think no, this has got to be the last chapter. No, next chapter. No, okay, and you do that for about four or five chapters, and then finally it ends.
Okay.
But Uncharted 2 is regarded the best one. I've never played it. I've seen gameplay, so I know what happens. But yeah, it is better.
Mm-hmm.
Uncharted, the first Uncharted, drove me insane with jumping and climbing, and it was the fact that when I'm pointing for him to jump one way, he just goes, no, I'm going to jump the opposite way because I'm a prick.
Yeah, it's one of those games similar to like early Kingdom Hearts where it's, you didn't mind the platform levels when it came out, but going back, those platform levels do not age very well.
No, they do not. So I am excited for Uncharted 2. I know it's an older game, but because I stream, and that's one of the games that I will be streaming, I want to take that on.
I'll look out for that, and I will watch it. I feel like I have to validate the reason that I never played it. I never played it is actually a lie. I played the first 5 minutes of it, first 10 minutes of it, about 17 times. I bought the game towards the end of my life cycle of that console, where it was pretty much dying.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just struggling to load. It kept crashing, it kept breaking, and just wouldn't get any further. And because of that, I lost interest. And yeah. I couldn't go back and play it. And
it's a shame.
It is a shame. I really, really miss not playing that
as
game.
As a guy who's played all of them sides,
Lost Legacy.
Uncharted 2 is definitely the pinnacle of the Uncharted series.
Don't tell me that.
It's one
don't
of
give
the,
me more homework.
No,
like, I don't
yeah,
wanna...
it's one of the. Not only that, I'd probably say it's out of like cover based kind of shooters like that. It's up there with one of the best of them. It's set piece after set piece after set piece that just keep going. It's a really good game. It does have too many levels. Mm-hmm. Uncharted, especially the first few Uncharted, they had a problem with that. Uncharted 3 is really good because it's quite short. And
yeah,
a lot of people moan about Uncharted 3, and they go moan because of the pacing. But I actually quite like the pacing. It gets to a point in Uncharted 4 where it's like It sounds stupid, but there's about four or five levels too long. It's just like, right, this is just going on now.
I agree with that.
Uncharted 2, it's weary, it's good, and I think that's it as well, because it peaks so much and the last four levels are just a bit... Mm-hmm. When it peaks, like, the rest of the game, it's fucking incredible. To be fair, it's fucking incredible. There's moments in that game where you it's that action-y, your hairs are standing, because it's just like, fucking, this shit's kicking off. It's Uncharted 2 is a fucking damn good game.
Okay. I'm not looking forward to the final boss in Uncharted 2.
Final bosses are always fun, though. They're always a challenge.
It's still frustrating. Like,
of course,
but
a dick.
The joy you get from completing a final boss, that validation you get when you actually beat it, and you're able to go, beat the last boss, put the pad down and just, like, sort of embrace it, like, show me the reward I get, like, that's something that...
You get credits,
but that's the reward structure.
That is your reward, you get credits.
Yeah, I'm okay
sometimes
with that.
Sometimes with some music.
I much prefer that validation than a... Bing! You've got a trophy or some other.
Yeah,
I don't know. I think some games I think don't deserve a boss, and I think some games do. It depends. I think sometimes bosses are just feel tacked on. Like BioShock. Let's be honest. The first BioShock game.
The last boss, and that was awful.
Yeah,
and so far removed from everything else that the game did.
Uncharted 2. I kind of feel the same with that. It's like okay. Maybe like Uncharted 4. Uncharted 4, it's a QTE.
There was a lot of QTEs in Uncharted 4.
But it makes sense with it. It seems right in that kind of context. So, the boss in Uncharted 2, it's a bit shit.
Okay.
But, Uncharted 2 is a great game.
So I'll watch your live streams, and if it's something that I feel like I've missed, given that I played 1, 3, and 4... If 2 is as good as you say, and you show that, then I'll may be tempted to go back and play it, because now that I have accepted that Nolan North and Nathan Drake are actually done with Uncharted, I think that they're already stepping away with The Lost Legacy. I think they're going to continue that franchise, but I don't think it's going to be Nathan Drake anymore.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that. Continue doing that stuff. I'm okay with that completely. But if 2 is as good as you say, and I've missed such a big... part of that story, then
two,
I will definitely get back.
Game. It's really, really good action game.
So, Jack, what is going to be your payday purchase?
Payday purchase. I don't know. Regards to purchase, I really want to get the Korg. I don't know if I mentioned this last month. I don't know. I can't remember. But there's a Korg. I've not been able to buy a lot. Well, I buy retro shit. But there is a Korg thing. I'll get to the point. The Korg music maker on the Switch, that's really cool. So it's like got synths in,
drum
that.
Bands. Yeah, they integrated.
Yeah, yeah,
I
yeah,
thought
yeah,
that
yeah.
This is something that we need to talk about at the point. But Korg's interaction and the integration with the Nintendo Switch is something that really intrigues me in terms of a music developer getting involved into consoles and as a way of advertising their products and encouraging people to use video editing software and
well,
that sort of environment.
I've got music on the PlayStation 1, if you remember that, and that was a fucking really good music making software. You could
wait, hold on one
stuff.
Sec. You're not talking about Kick, Punch, It's All in the Mind.
No,
not
that,
Parappa
that,
the Rapper.
That's Parappa the Rapper. No, that the music game, and that was a really good like sequence. You could really edit like drum beats and everything on
nice.
It. It's really, really good music maker. And this looks like it's kind of like that on the Switch, and I'm down with that. I mean, we've talked about having background music in this podcast, so it'd be a good thing for me to use it.
Hey, if your next purchase is going to be the Korg software, and you're able to integrate that into this podcast, it's only going to enrich the service. And
well,
it's also going to be another shout of saying that gaming is another. There's another aspect of gaming that's going to bleed into other mediums. Like we've already seen it with comic books, we've seen it with films. They can integrate music engineering into it, then fucking power to them.
But what I'm going to play, it's either going to be, because I'm near that at the end of, as I said earlier, Resident Evil 7. I'm probably either going to go with Uncharted Lost Legacy or Dishonored. What's the DLC called on that? Stranger something, isn't it? The Outsider.
Death of the Outsider.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm either going to play one of them two, or either one of them two, I think.
Cool.
I'd go through some of the games that are coming out. We've got We Happy Few, apparently.
Xbox only.
That's coming out on August the 10th, which is intriguing, honestly. So, like,
is that single player now properly, or is it like the open world survival, the weird shit that it was meant to be?
I think it's still kind of up in the air. From what we saw at E3, it's still survival, because you have to keep taking your joy.
Mm-hmm.
But you... obviously you don't want to take your joy, and it looks a bit more story based. I really don't know.
If it's story based, cool.
I'll be excited to see streams of it. From Xbox players that I know and stream. So I'll be looking forward to watching them play, because I don't have an Xbox.
I think it's a big one for Xbox.
It is, and it's one of those few titles that are coming out that could make a statement for them, because they need to make a statement for their exclusives. Yeah. And I think if this one's even remotely intriguing, then it's going to make a big difference for them, which I'm really happy and really intrigued for. Other than that, we've got the final season of the Telltale series of The Walking Dead. That comes out on August the 14th.
I played the first season of that. It was really good.
I really liked the first one.
I've just not bothered after that.
I played halfway through the first episode of season two and gave up. I couldn't get through it any further. Because the first one I really liked. I really enjoyed it. And
it was incredible.
I do like the idea of going back and playing just so I can enjoy the final chapter of it, because it is a unique narrative that you don't see, and that was the pinnacle of that sort of narrative, especially Telltale. They did The Wolf Amongst Us, which was standout, and then they did Walking Dead. Those are the two. Like, the other ones they've done, the Game of Thrones, the Batman.
I like Batman.
I really enjoyed the Batman one.
I really enjoyed the Batman. I haven't played the second one yet.
Ooh, you need to.
I will.
Okay. That is so much better.
Okay, I'm going to add that to my payday purchase.
Yeah, you need to get that.
Is it more of the same, or does it add something new?
I can't give anything away.
Okay.
It's not worth me giving anything away, but all I can say is if you're a Batman fan, you're going to enjoy it.
You've seen the artwork.
Yes, I have. I'm talking to the people.
So is it more of the same of season one, or does it offer anything new?
The Joker.
Sold.
it's kind of more the transition of John Doe to the Joker, and oh my gosh, I loved it. Like, I enjoyed it. I know my choices don't make a difference. I know. But I don't care.
I don't care when you're Batman.
No, and I really enjoyed it. Like, it carries on the sort of story as you go along. It also, if you saved it to your Telltale account,
I did.
It carries on your saves. It carries on your choices.
Stupid Metacritic. So I played that on Xbox because they did when I still had my Xbox. It was so cheap, the first one on.
Yeah.
So I played it. Hopefully, it will be able to cross over. So other than that, we've got Yakuza Kiwami 2 coming out on the 28th of August.
Yeah, I'll be buying that. That's next payday.
Yeah.
I now refuse to stream any more Yakuza until I get a PC and I can use it through a capture card. Because the first Yakuza Kiwami did me over. I streamed the whole game, get to the final chapter, it went, nah, not today, fam. And then
nope. I feel like I have to apologise to you for Yakuza. So, those out there listening may have seen the video where we went to the market and bought some games. I was recommended Yakuza Kiwami. I bought that whilst on my phone. I came back and tried playing it and then realised it was in Japanese and was like, I am too tired to read what the fuck is going on. And I have not played it since that point. And it's not that I'm against reading subtitles. It's just I couldn't be fucked.
The subtitles are funny. You need to read like some of the titles of what people are called and things like that. Like one guy is called like angry looking man.
Angry looking.
That is his name.
Yeah. That's kind of like the IMDb for some extras.
Yeah, I think they really play on the subtitles. No, like, yeah. The localization in that game is really, really smartly done. They really play on, like, I think even like bad translation, don't they?
Yeah, they do. So they do.
Like really, they really like play on like all that. It's very self-aware of what it's trying to do.
There's
like
a conversation of dilfs.
Dilfs.
Dilfs. Yeah, like milfs.
I'm aware of the statement. It's not one that you hear often. But...
No, that is used.
Okay.
In there somewhere. Yeah, I got really invested in Yakuza, and I will buy Kiwami 2, but I will not be streaming any of them until I get a PC.
Okay, that's fair enough. And the only thing I think else that's worth mentioning, it's another remake, to be fair, but if any of you missed it when it came out on the Dreamcast, I think if you get the chance, fucking play it, because it is such a hidden gem, and I hate using that phrase, but the Dreamcast had very few... really good games, but on the 20...
What about Choo Choo Rocket?
Choo Choo Rocket is good. It's a good little puzzle game.
It is. it's not the same calibre of the game that I'm about to announce. So on the 21st of August, for all consoles from what I can see, maybe not Switch because they're different, but Shenmue 1 and 2 is coming out.
Is that a hidden
game?
Yeah,
indeed.
For those that didn't have a Dreamcast,
well, I suppose for nowadays, Shenmue was a game changer.
It really was.
Gaming.
It redefined a lot of the genre, and they were able to enrich that world that very few games have been able to do even today. And this is what 10, 15, 20 years on. I don't know how many years it's been out, but that game did something that very few games have done.
And Castlevania made a drinking game out of it.
Okay, we're going to have to play that.
Every time the main character says, is it?
Holy shit, I'm sure they say that, like, I'm pretty sure that's their, like, default response to a lot of the...
Yeah.
Could do that with Yakuza with...
I'll try and find the clip of it. It's the first thing Castlevania ever did. And anyone who's not watching this, watch Castlevania. It's a genius show.
Also, if anyone's interested in that idea of drinking games for this drinking game podcast, for sort of comments like that for games of back in the day, we that might be something that we look into.
We should do probably actually when Shenmue comes out, why not we all get together and we play Shenmue and do the drinking game.
Loda, have you played Shenmue?
I have not.
Okay, how about when it comes out, you stream it. And Jack and I will make a drink games out of it that we can all get along with.
Well, we'll do the is it?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
And maybe another one when sort of failures or sort of...
There'll be a lot of those.
Or successes or something.
There'll be no successes.
Is it will do us.
Yeah, they're pretty good.
I will look into whether it will direct stream from the PS4.
I reckon it will. It's a bit. They need to do it if Shenmue 3 is coming out. It will get a whole new generation into it. And Shenmue was. I mean, I remember playing that game and just not even playing the story and just going in the arcades and playing Space Out of your
interest. I think that's something that's that most people don't.
That's all I did in Yakuza.
I think that's something that Yakuza took from Shenmue that was really well. I think one of the things that Shenmue did that many other games didn't do was similar to kind of again like Stardew Valley does and. They enriched every facet of the environment. So, like, what Shenmue did so well was every screen that you went into, there was something that you could do that you could occupy your time in. Yeah. Which meant that if you were, as you say, if you weren't inclined to pursue the story, there was plenty of side quests and plenty of stuff that you could do that you could get enjoyment out of.
I think as well, don't quote me on this, but I think where the village is kind of set...
Mm-hmm.
The weather is actually the real weather that happened during that time.
Like during that period?
Yeah. I think it's like it's...
That wouldn't surprise me.
Shenmue was a big game. Everyone should play it. Youngers should play it. Yeah, you'll go, oh, it was a bit dated, but you got to think of the time it was made. You're like, you wouldn't have your GTAs without Shenmue. You wouldn't... It really was a game changer.
It really was.
Really. It still is. It is impressive now. I think even every character has their own voice in it.
Every character had their own voice. It was the ambition of the developers. Like, the studio wanted to make an 11-game series or something like that. Yeah. Like, it was very ambitious, but fucking credit to him. So yeah, that's something. 21st of August, that's when that comes out. I probably
yeah,
will.
I'm gonna get that.
I will get that.
I think we should do a stream where Lola plays it and we just drink every time. It's
yeah,
like,
that
I mean,
sounds
if
like
Lola
that.
Wants to get pissed as well.
I can get drunk. Just don't tell Twitch.
You can have yours in a straw. We'll stream on YouTube on the drinking games. Okay.
Yeah, we'll drinking games. So watch out for that, people. It's coming up soon.
There we go.
Soon. just an open statement there. Soon.
Well, it'll be between now and the next podcast. It's time to hit.
We'll figure it out.
Anywho,
so is there anything else that you guys are looking forward to the course of this month, or are we caught there?
I think I'm cool.
Mm. All right, I think that will do it. Lola, if you want to take us away.
Thank you for joining us for Drinking Games Podcast. If you like this video, please do press that thumbs up. If you'd like to see more of our content, please do click subscribe. And if you want some notifications, don't forget to click that bell.
And if you don't like it, then just fuck off. We don't want you. We don't need you here, so just go. Go on. Get out of here. Yeah.